Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Viedma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 4 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered how common is low testosterone and why are rates rising in younger men. Today we're getting into primary hypogonadism versus secondary hypogonadism. This matters more than most men realize. I see this every week. A guy gets one low testosterone result, maybe from an afternoon blood draw, maybe with no LH or FSH, and suddenly he thinks the decision is simple. It isn't. Two men can have the same total testosterone on paper and need opposite treatments. One may need testosterone replacement because the testes are failing. The other may be able to restore his own production with enclomyphene, preserve fertility, and avoid shutting down his testicles. If you miss that distinction, you can make a long-term decision from a very incomplete snapshot. A month or two ago, a man in his early 40s came in with fatigue, low libido, weaker recovery in the gym, and a total testosterone in the low 200s from an outside lab. He had already convinced himself he needed injections. A friend at the gym had been helpful, which is often how bad endocrine decisions begin. We repeated the testing properly in the morning and added what should have been there from the start, free testosterone, LH, and FSH. His free testosterone was low, but LH and FSH were not elevated. They were low normal. That is a very different conversation from a man with the same testosterone and clearly high LH and FSH. That's the first principle. Male hypogonadism is a clinical syndrome. It requires both persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence. A low number alone is not the diagnosis. Symptoms alone are not enough either. At Viedma, we use morning testing between 7 oz and 11 tau. We use a total testosterone measured by LC-MS-MS and a direct free testosterone measured by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS-MS. We prioritize free testosterone because total testosterone can look decent while free testosterone is quietly low. Our decision thresholds, when symptoms persist, are 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone. And every time, LH and FSH need to be there. Without them, you have not classified the problem. Think of the system like a car with a gas pedal and an engine. LH and FSH are part of the signal from the brain. LH mainly tells the testes to make testosterone. FSH mainly supports sperm production. If testosterone is low, the brain should be pressing harder on the gas. If LH and FSH are high and testosterone is still low, the signal is strong, but the engine is not responding. That is primary hypogonadism. If testosterone is low and LH and FSH are low, or even normal, the gas pedal is not being pressed enough. That is secondary hypogonadism, and that word normal fools people. In the setting of low testosterone, a normal LH can be abnormal because it is inappropriately normal. Primary hypogonadism is the testicular failure pattern. The formal phrase is hypergonadotropic hypogonadism, which sounds like something designed by a committee, but the concept is simple. The pituitary is yelling, the testes are not answering. On labs, testosterone is low and LH and FSH are elevated. The European Male Aging Study helps sort this pattern out from secondary and compensated forms, and clinically it behaves differently. The problem is in the testes themselves. Sometimes primary hypogonadism is present from birth. Klinefelter syndrome is the most common genetic cause, affecting about 1 in 500 to 1,000 live male births, and fewer than half of cases are ever diagnosed. That underdiagnosis is real. Men can go years being told they are just tired, stressed, depressed, or not trying hard enough. Other times the cause is acquired. I think about prior chemotherapy, especially alkylating agents, radiation to the testes, severe trauma, torsion, or chitis, including mumps or chitis, surgical removal of the testes, or long-term alcohol-related damage. One thing I've learned in clinic is that the cause is often sitting quietly in the history. A guy will casually mention halfway through the visit that he had undescended testes as a child or cancer treatment in his 20s, and suddenly the whole picture makes sense. When the problem is truly primary, stimulation therapy is usually not enough. If the testes cannot respond, asking the brain to send a stronger signal does not solve much. Educationally, this is where testosterone replacement usually enters the conversation. And to be fair, TRT has an appropriate role in documented primary hypogonadism. The largest randomized trial we have, the TREVERS trial, followed about 5,000 men and found testosterone therapy was non-inferior to placebo for major cardiovascular events. It also did not show an increased prostate cancer risk. The most common issue was elevated hematocrit, which is why monitoring matters. But even when TRT is appropriate, it suppresses LH and FSH further and can impair spermatogenesis. Fertility counseling has to happen before treatment starts. Testosterone is treatment for true deficiency. It is not a toy for optimization, bodybuilding, or anti-aging in men whose hormones are actually normal. Secondary hypogonadism is different. This is the central signal failure pattern. The testes may still work, but the hypothalamus or pituitary is not sending enough signal. On labs, testosterone is low, and LH and FSH are low or inappropriately normal. Causes range from pituitary tumors and high prolactin to traumatic brain injury, prior pituitary surgery, chronic opioid use, glucocorticoids, previous testosterone or anabolic steroid exposure, obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, chronic organ failure, acute illness, severe dieting, and overtraining. The Endocrine Society guideline is very clear that gonadotropins are essential here because they separate testicular failure from central suppression. In the real world, the mistake is usually not missing some rare zebra. The mistake is assuming every low testosterone result means permanent failure. Most of the men I see with this pattern do not have a destroyed axis. They have a suppressed one. The signal is muted by weight gain, poor sleep, medications, insulin resistance, alcohol, or a long period of physical and mental stress. That does not make the symptoms less real. It just changes what the first treatment should be. This is where enclomiphene makes sense. It is the first line therapy for secondary and functional hypogonadism when LH is below 8 μIU/mL and the clinical picture fits. Enclomiphene blocks estrogen feedback at the hypothalamus, which increases GnRH, raises LH and FSH, and tells the testes to make testosterone naturally. You are working with the body's own regulation instead of bypassing it. A BJU international study showed enclomiphene increased endogenous testosterone while preserving sperm counts, which is almost the mirror image of what happens with exogenous testosterone. In practice, the advantages matter. It preserves spermatogenesis and fertility. It helps maintain testicular size and function. It tends to carry a lower hematocrit risk than TRT. And if the underlying causes are addressed, some men may not need it forever. At VIDMA, this is why we are so particular about classification before treatment. We are not a TRT clinic. We do not prescribe testosterone injections. We focus on a thorough diagnostic workup or a review of labs you already have, and then individualized plans with enclomiphene as first line when appropriate. If erection issues or urinary symptoms are also part of the picture, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet can be useful. There are injectable fertility medications that can stimulate the testes too, but for many men who do not need immediate fertility treatment, oral enclomiphene is often the cleaner starting point. Now, within secondary hypogonadism, there is a category that deserves its own spotlight because it is the most common one in daily practice, functional hypogonadism. This is low testosterone caused by reversible suppression of an otherwise intact HPG axis. No structural damage in the brain, no permanent failure in the testes. The axis is just being dragged down by something else, usually obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, medications, chronic illness, or a pretty ugly combination of all of them. Remember last episode when we talked about why low testosterone seems to be showing up more often in younger men? This is where that becomes practical. Much of that rise is tied to metabolic health and lifestyle patterns that suppress an axis that is still capable of working. When I was earlier in training, I used to think telling a man to lose weight was a sufficient endocrine plan. I was wrong. Weight loss can improve obesity-associated hypogonadotropic hypogonadism. A systematic review showed that, but in clinic, the hormonal gain from lifestyle change alone is often modest, around 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter, and long-term weight regain is common. Depending on the study, 60 to 86% of lost weight comes back within 3 years. That is not a moral failure. It is just reality. So, for functional hypogonadism, the practical first move is often enclomiphene plus lifestyle modification. Wake up the axis while you work on sleep, body composition, insulin resistance, alcohol, medications, and training recovery. If you treat a reversible, intact axis as if it were permanent testicular failure, you may push a man into lifelong testosterone therapy unnecessarily and compromise fertility in the process. There is also a third category that gets ignored because it is messier: androgen resistance or decreased androgen bioactivity. Sometimes the issue is not how much testosterone is circulating, it is how well tissues can use it. The androgen receptor may not respond normally. Conversion to dihydrotestosterone may be reduced. Some medications can interfere with androgen action. In my clinic, the more common version of this problem is not a rare receptor mutation. It is a man with symptoms, a total testosterone that looks fine, and a low free testosterone that explains why he feels off. That is why we measure free testosterone directly with equilibrium dialysis, rather than guessing from a calculation. We do not order SHBG as a separate test in our standard workflow. We measure the thing we care about directly. A related pattern is compensated hypogonadism. This one confuses people because testosterone is still in range, but LH is elevated. In plain English, the pituitary is working harder than usual to keep testosterone normal. The European Male Aging Study identified this as a distinct warning pattern. It is not established testosterone deficiency by itself, because the testosterone criterion is not met, but it may mark early strain on the axis or evolving gonadal failure. I see men like this who feel fine and simply need monitoring. I also see men whose symptoms are starting, and the labs tell me the system is under pressure before it actually falls over. This is where patience helps. Hormones are not improved by panic, and men are sometimes very committed to panic. Age of onset matters too. The same endocrine problem looks completely different depending on when it starts. If hypogonadism begins before puberty, the presentation can include delayed puberty, poor virilization, and small testes. If it starts in adult life, it is often subtle and easy to confuse with ordinary aging, stress, poor sleep, or weight gain. Reduced libido, weaker erections, loss of morning erections, lower motivation, brain fog, slower recovery, more abdominal fat, less muscle, lower mood. Same system, very different appearance. That is one more reason not to worship a single number. A testosterone of 320 does not mean the same thing in a man who never completed puberty, a man recovering from anabolic steroid use, and a man with obesity-driven functional suppression in his late 30s. A lot of guys hear all of this and think, fine, but if the testosterone is low, isn't that enough? No, this is the mistake I see most often. One result from the wrong time of day, with no symptoms history and no LH or FSH, is not a diagnosis. Testosterone is a moving target. Sleep, illness, training load, alcohol, and timing all affect it. If symptoms persist, get the right labs, at the right time, with the right context. Otherwise, you are trying to build a treatment plan on static. Another common misunderstanding is that a normal LH means the brain is doing its job. Not necessarily. If testosterone is truly low, LH should rise. If it sits in the normal range instead, that may be exactly the clue that the central signal is failing. Context changes the meaning of the lab. The absolute number matters less than whether it makes physiologic sense. Then there is the belief that all low testosterone should be treated the same way, usually with testosterone. That is how fertility gets damaged by accident. TRT suppresses gonadotropins and spermatogenesis. For primary hypogonadism, that trade-off may be necessary and appropriate. For secondary or functional hypogonadism, it may be the wrong first move. Men also ask if TRT is safe, as if that is the whole question. Safety matters, of course. The best evidence we have is more reassuring than many people think. But the first question is not, is testosterone safe? The first question is testosterone the right treatment for the kind of hypogonadism you actually have? And one more. Men assume a normal total testosterone means hormones are not the issue. Also not true. Free testosterone matters. Androgen action matters. Medication effects matter. I've had men with normal total testosterone who looked fine on a rushed lab review and made perfect sense once we checked free testosterone correctly. A single total number can miss clinically important deficiency, especially when symptoms are very consistent. If you want a practical framework, keep it simple. First, test in the morning between 7 Zao and 11 Hao, and include total testosterone, direct free testosterone, LH and FSH. Add estradiol, CBC, a comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, PSA, if you are 40 or older, and insulin if your BMI is over 25. When it fits the history, add a lipid panel, prolactin, and TSH. Second, diagnose the syndrome, not the lab value, symptoms plus biochemical evidence. Third, classify before treating, low testosterone with high LH and FSH points to primary hypogonadism, low testosterone with low or inappropriately normal LH and FSH points to secondary hypogonadism. Functional hypogonadism sits in that secondary bucket, but it is usually the most reversible form. Normal testosterone with high LH is compensated hypogonadism, which needs monitoring, not reflex treatment. And if total testosterone looks okay, but symptoms are strong, pay attention to free testosterone and androgen bioactivity. Fourth, match the treatment to the mechanism. If the axis is intact and LH is below 8 μU/mL, enclamyphene is usually the first move, especially when fertility matters. Use lifestyle change alongside it, not as a scolding speech from across the desk. If erection or urinary symptoms are part of the same picture, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination can make sense. Follow up after the first month, then every 6 months, and adjust based on symptoms and labs. If the pattern points to primary hypogonadism, that is a different conversation, and it should include fertility planning from the start. Next time, we'll get into how the HPG axis works, the brain testes connection explained. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free or order labs through our special offer at VIDMA.com.